have a conversation before you start and be very candid and very open about both of your goals and responsibilities and what you guys are both willing to take on.
You're listening to the Better Off Said podcast, hosted by Nikki Butler and Becca Booker. Better Off Said is a look into the real life situations of today's female millennials. From business ventures to self-care, dating with apps to parenting with screens, nothing is off limits.
While we're both 20-somethings, bloggers, and self-starters, we bring our own unique perspective to the topics we discuss as we're in two completely different stages of life. Expect to hear unfiltered conversations, expert opinions, and overall things that are just better off said.
Thanks for tuning in to the Better Off Said podcast.
We're so excited to start the conversation.
Hi, everyone. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. Welcome back.
We are so excited to bring you our guest today. But before we get to her, we are going to go through our boss moments and then our recommended products that we love. So, Becca, do you want to go first with your boss moment?
Yes. Okay. So, things that are better off said for me have been, I feel like a lot of the pros, like hair wise, say that like dirty hair, like second day hair is always better. It like holds style better. And I just think I am an exception to that rule. Like, I feel like my hair falls flat really easy. Like my hair is just so fine. Like even when we did our podcast photo shoot, the girl who did my hair, like my hair looked great in the chair that morning and she like just did a blowout and she's like, do you want to just keep it like this? It looks really good. And I was like, sure. And then like, I feel like by the time I got to the photo shoot, I lost like all the volume that I had gotten. So like, I've been trying to be better and like rework this like and figure out how I can make it work for my hair. So I've been like using dry shampoo at night before my hair really like gets dirty. So like say I wash my hair in the morning and then like same day that I washed it that night, I'll put some dry shampoo in it before I go to bed, which helps. And then I've also been using Unites Expanda Dust before like the first time I style my hair. I used to like only really do it on the second day because like on day one, I usually have enough volume that it's fine. But I'm just realizing that it's better to be like proactive than reactive with this sort of thing. So wish me luck.
Best of luck.
Thank you.
But I mean, everyone's hair is so different. Like I know for me in that sense, like I have great second day hair, but I also dye my hair blonde and I think that dries it out a little bit. So it's not nearly as oily as probably like someone who doesn't dye her hair blonde or black, which are the most like intense colors.
I did notice that though, like I do have really fine hair. And when I did start lightening it, like in college was mainly when I got like into like highlights, lightening, ombre, whatever. My hair did get a little more texture and that helped, even though like it was technically damaged.
I know. Cause it's actually like drying, it's bleaching your hair. It's like drying it out
right
a little bit more. So yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a struggle, but I realized like too, when I haven't dyed my hair in a while, which I'm sure I'll get to that point here very shortly being quarantined, my hair gets oily so much faster, like at the root. And it looks like stringy and greasy and it's gross. And I feel like I have to always like do my half wash, which is where I just part my hair in like a half up style situation. And I just wash the top. So
smart. Yeah.
Feel ya. But
how do you prevent the bottom part of your hair though from getting wet?
So I part it, I put it up in like a bun on the top and then I take the bottom and I put it back into a bun too, like a really tight bun. Mm-hmm. And I just leave it lower and I'll either wash the top in the sink or I'll just like be careful in the shower. And I mean, it obviously gets like some sprinkles of water and gets like slightly wet, but it's nothing that's like drenched or soaked or anything. So that's what I do. Some people use like, I mean, I don't know how actually you would use like a shower cap with that. You'd probably have to like bobby pin it or something.
Or saran wrap your
hair. Or saran wrap.
Bottom part of your hair.
Yeah.
I saw on TikTok, like someone, in order to clip their dog's nails, they like saran wrapped their forehead essentially, like around their head, and they smeared peanut butter on their forehead. And then like they like grabbed their dog's paw and like clipped it, and the dog just licked her forehead, so it like allowed her to get like really close to her dog. And like,
oh gosh,
it was honestly kind of genius, and people have been posting about it, and it's working for them too.
Well, that's good.
What's your boss moment, Nikki?
So mine is probably a little controversial, but I was at TJ's yesterday, Trader Joe's, and I was just picking up a bunch of frozen stuff, and I was looking at the cauliflower gnocchi and just couldn't help but think like that it's just gross. It's not good. I've had it quite a few times, and I feel like I've just been telling myself that I like it because everybody else is raving about it. And I mean, it's so gummy. It's super squishy. And like when you put sauce on it, it just makes it like even more just like mush. I don't know. It's just not good.
Okay, I noticed when I cook it, I have to cook it way longer than on the package.
Oh, for sure. Like I,
in order to get it brown.
The package instructions are totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like you definitely have to like saute it and get like a little brown on mm-hmm. each side before you pour in the water and like steam it or whatever it tells you to do, because it's just so, it's like so gummy.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Word on Top Chef, and that's how I associate it with.
I actually last used it in a recipe for like a soup, like a heartier soup. So like you cook the cauliflower gnocchi kind of like normal, and then you add it to Trader Joe's low sodium tomato soup, like the one that comes in like a carton.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was actually really good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Can you hear Cannon?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I sound like,
okay. It's like not that bad.
Okay. Hey, well, are you going to go get him? Well, no, he should be going to sleep. He's standing up right now. Look at him.
Aww.
I literally put him down 30 minutes ago. Back to life updates.
Yes.
Okay, Becca, your shade sale thing.
Let's Okay, so I, this past weekend, had a big project to hang a shade sale like on my side patio. And I had ordered the shade sale for it like literally in February, because when my parents were supposed to come visit in March, it was going to be one of those things that my dad was going to help me hang. And so like next, or like on Monday or something, it's supposed to be 100 degrees. So I was like, I have to get this shade sale up or else I'm just like not going to be able to use my patio anymore. So I like bought all the tools. I rented it's called a drill hammer, I think, where it allows you to dig into or drill into like basically cement and, cinder block and, stucco. So I like rented one of those, and it's $60 or $57 for a day. And then like, I was waiting for Parker to come over to help me, do like actually drill the holes in the wall. And he was like, do you need to run this by your HOA? And I was like, probably. And he was like, do you want me to like look into that? And he's an attorney. So I was like, yeah, like that'd be great. Cause I don't know. Like, I don't really know what to
do. Wow. How convenient.
I know. And so he like, I just pulled up I think it's called my CCR or something. And he like knows exactly how to like navigate the like section A, part B. Like he knew exactly what part to go to. It was so nice. Like it would have taken me like hours. And I technically needed written approval from my board of directors. So then like that night we walked around my condo complex, but it's hard because like from the looking at the places at the front, you can't see their backyard. And like, so I could only really see the backyards of the units that like either faced the pool area or like were on the outside of the community. And like a couple of them did have shade sails, but they were like the retractable kind and they were brown. So I was like, okay, like maybe I can get away with it. So basically what I ended up doing is the next day I hung it anyways. It's white. And the only person who will be able to see it is my neighbor. And then I plan on getting written approval from my board of directors like now after the fact that I have already hung it, because like
the worst thing they could say is I like need to fill in the holes, which would suck because I already paid $60 to like rent the drill, but it's just a little frustrating.
I feel like you and Parker are going to be like Sivan and her husband.
Oh yeah. You know? I never thought about that. Yeah.
Like he can read all your contracts.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That's really nice. Super
convenient. I'm having him like look over my NDA for like my employees too.
Yeah. See, like that's so nice.
Yeah. It's great.
Well, my life update, I mean, it's been hard for me to really find one because it's like the same.
Yeah.
Every day is Groundhog Day, especially now. But I am going through a rebrand for my business.
That's exciting.
Which I feel like it's just going to be, it's just really necessary. But I like had started.
So are you like redoing the name and everything too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to just like umbrella everything like under my name just to be like, it's just easy. I feel like unless I get like divorced or something, I won't have to like change it, you know?
Yeah.
But I had started in like events and weddings and realized that that's just kind of not where my heart lies. It's also a little frustrating dealing with crazy families.
Yeah.
But
mother-in-laws.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's been fun though so far since I've done it. But my background's in PR, so I'm going to kind of take my background and modernize it a bit and wrap it into like what I'm passionate about, which are podcasts, oddly enough. Yay. Podcasts and then obviously like the digital influencer space. So I will be representing podcasts as well as influencers and creating like a larger network and booking guests on podcasts and booking influencers on podcasts. So basically podcasts who really want like high quality guests will be reaching out for them. And then influencers who want to do like podcast tours will be doing that. And then also doing the more kind of other PR side of it and reaching out to brands.
I love it. Creating
brand contracts. For you. Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like it's just more like up my alley. Yeah. It's always hard finding yourself.
And like, I feel like when you pivot like that, like sometimes like you'll end up pivoting, like you'll be like, oh, I don't like this arm of it. Or like, I'm really good at this part. So like,
for sure.
I think it's cool that you're open to so much of that.
Yeah. You just kind of like have to do and do and do until like,
yeah,
you realize what you want, what you don't want.
Yeah.
Tweaking. So that's my sitch. But okay. Hey, maybe we can, you know, partner and you can do social media for these podcasts.
I would love to. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of podcasts, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes. So Brianna is a makeup artist, first and foremost. She had a couple stints, one in like TV and film doing like really cool costume makeup. She has also worked at Paris, New York, and Milan Fashion Weeks. And she's from the East Coast, specifically Boston, and met her husband who is from Arizona, which brought her out here. And then she partnered with her business partner, Stephanie Neheisel, and they created 11 Co. Agency, which is a makeup and hair artist agency. They represent hair and makeup artists and find them jobs, whether it's for a wedding, doing the brides and bridesmaids, or an editorial shoot, or anything like that. And so they represent those artists and do all that. So
love it.
She's really cool, though. She's edgier. She's a mom. So that's kind of fun. She's just juggling all the things that I know too well.
Cool.
So, oh, we didn't do our products too. Really quick.
Oh, I forgot. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Brianna and we'll talk to her in a minute. But for our products really quick, because we said last week that we really wanted to start talking about one of our favorite products. One of mine, and I actually got it in the Sephora sale, is the Kat Von D Tattoo Liner. All of her stuff's completely clean and vegan, which is always bonus, but it's it's just like one of those liners that's so easy to apply. And before I was always using like the MAC pot, the gel pot with a brush. And I just felt like it was like way too messy to do without having to like,
you have to clean the brush,
pull your eye.
to get like a super straight line. And I just feel like this is super sharp and really good. So
cool. My product is the CBD gummies I take nightly. They are from the brand. It's called Not Pot. And what's cool about them is for every bottle of gummies that they sell, they, I forget what the monetary amount is, but a portion of the sales go to funding someone's bailout who is in jail for a past crime related to marijuana possession. Like, because back in the day, like,
it was obviously
put in, right. And illegal. People were put in jail for kind of like ridiculous amounts of time. And now that like the perception around marijuana has changed, they're like putting funding towards bailout, which I think is really cool. But they're called Not Pot. They come in a bunch of different flavors. I love the watermelon, but I just got a notification that their blue raspberry is back in stock. They also have like elderberry and a couple other flavors too. So we'll link that in the show notes.
Awesome. Love it. Okay. So let's go ahead and welcome Brianna to the podcast. Okay. Hi, Brianna. How are you?
Welcome.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. So Brie and I was trying to remember, what was the first thing we worked together on? Was it my baby shower?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
What I did was when I met you at my studio to do your makeup for your shower when you were
pregnant. That's right. Okay. So I reached out to Brie because I had heard of her agency, which at the time was the Phoenix Makeup Collective. Mm-hmm. And I needed someone to do my makeup, and I had come across her Instagram, and she's just beyond talented. Mm-hmm. And I have people ask me all the time, like, who did your makeup for your podcast shoot? Who did your makeup for your baby shower? Wow. So,
well, you've got amazing. A nice face to work on. So that helps too.
Oh, thanks.
Sometimes. And I met Brie when we had her on a Dames Collective panel last year.
Yes. Yeah. She was. Her and her partner, Stephanie, were on together. Why don't we just start with like your background? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started as a makeup artist.
So it's kind of crazy when I think about it now, because I feel like, you know, I don't feel like I've been doing it that long. And then I look back and it's almost been a decade, which makes
me
really old.
Something to celebrate.
Yeah. I am from the East Coast originally, and I grew up in Boston and moved to New York to go to makeup school. And prior to that, just kind of growing up in general, my mom's an artist. So I've always had that kind of background. I went to college. I was a fine arts minor. I did a lot of clay work and sculpting. And so after that, I kind of always knew I wanted to do something artistic. And I always just kind of gravitated towards faces for whatever reason. And I really loved the idea of working on people and using the face as a canvas versus some other type of medium as an artist. So I ended up moving to New York, and I went to school for makeup and specializing in prosthetic appliances and special effects, actually. So when I initially started, I thought I was going to be in New York, you know, working on like Star Wars for the rest of my life, doing, you know, character makeups and horror movies and that whole thing. And I loved that kind of aspect of it. And I think because I had a background in sculpting and ceramics, that's kind of what drew me to that. But then, you know, you never know what's going to happen with the course of your life. And everything kind of went from there and has completely flipped over for me. And now I do much more beauty bridal commercial work over the last decade. But it's been interesting because I feel like I've had the opportunity to kind of work in so many different sectors and different types of makeup as an artist, which has been really interesting as well. So that's
so cool. Yeah. So what like sparked your interest in like transitioning from like the special effects side into what do you call it? Regular makeup then?
More the beauty side versus
beauty. Okay.
So it wasn't a choice that I made for myself, but looking back now, I honestly can't imagine doing anything else than what I'm doing now.
Was it Doug?
Yeah.
Doug is her husband.
Yeah. So I was living in New York and working, and I met my husband at a wedding in Denver, Colorado, which was just super random. And we started doing long distance for about a year between Phoenix and New York. And finally, I just said, okay, you know what? Like I freelance. I literally can, you know, I can potentially find jobs anywhere. So why don't I try and find a gig out in Phoenix so we can actually live in the same city for a little bit, see how it's going to work, go from there. So I moved out to Phoenix in 2012. So I've been here now for 8 years, which is insane to me.
Wait, me too. That's when I moved out here.
Crazy.
Oh, wow.
So, moved out here to run the makeup department for a haunted house. So it was like a 2-month gig and I never left. So staying here, I kind of went through a process of deciding, like, did I still want to keep doing makeup? What was I going to do? I had already started in New York and was finally getting to a space in film and TV where I was starting to get callbacks and more continued work, which ideally for a freelancer is like where you want to be. And now I'm here moving to another city and now I've got to do that all again. And it's not anywhere near what it is as far as film goes as New York. So I was just kind of like, well, what the heck am I going to do? So I ended up flipping everything over to bridal. And I just thought, I had started doing Fashion Week, which is a whole nother sector of my career.
Yeah. I want to touch on that too.
I had started doing that while I was in New York. And so I had done beauty work. And so I just kind of felt like, you know what, this place is huge for the bridal market, did some research and decided to start my own bridal business, and kind of everything exploded from there. So that was how I transitioned into beauty work. I think if I was still in New York, I probably would still be doing more of the special effects and staying in film and TV. But like I said, now I can't really imagine doing anything else.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your stints in Fashion Week. It's Paris, Milan, and New York that you've worked in, right?
And London.
And London. Okay. Add another one to the list.
So,
yeah, I want to know like what's like a day look like.
So it's kind of interesting because I worked on the hair department side for Fashion Week, which I loved because it was taking me outside of makeup and also just everything within my industry. I just feel like I love to soak everything up. So any experience I can get, I'll take. But I was also in more of like a management position. So I was actually a producer for a session stylist. So he is with an agency in New York and he works all over the world and does, you know, covers for Vogue, a bunch of just kind of everything. Like he does all editorial styling. And so I started producing because he was getting booked for so many shows during Fashion Week that his agency didn't want to take care of it because it was too much on top of everything else that they were doing with all of their other artists. And so I kind of fell into it as a gig because he had gone through a couple of people prior to me who had done it and did like 2 shows and were like, I can't handle it. I can't do it. It's too much. And he has made a few people cry. Like it's one of those things. Like it's,
oh God.
It's not for the faint of heart. And I am somebody who I have a wicked thick skin. I like telling people what to do. I have a loud voice. I can shout at you backstage. Basically, I had to run the hair department backstage for all of his shows. And so it kind of transformed from just doing a few shows in New York to doing about 35 shows every season between New York, London, Milan, and Paris. And I did that for 8 years.
Wow.
So I had about like 100 hairstylists that I was booking. I was doing all the travel, all the day-to-day, running the backstage, kind of all of that.
Is there like any famous model whose hair have you done who we would recognize?
He works with everybody. I mean, we've worked with Belle and Gigi. He's worked with, what are some of their names? Like some of the older, like wicked famous supermodels.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it's just everybody. Cause a lot of the shows, we've done some pretty big shows. Like I was sitting here trying to think, cause I thought of your question and I was like, oh, I got to look back and see like over the years. Cause I've done 15 seasons in total. So I've done hundreds of shows.
Wow.
But like some of my favorites that we've done, and I kind of tried to separate them out by city, but like in New York, we started doing Brandon Maxwell. We did his very first show.
I love him.
And that was really cool. We did, I want to say maybe like 3 or 4 of his shows, I believe. And now he's working with a different hairstylist now. But Adam Selman, he was the stylist for Rihanna for a while and he has his own line now.
Wow.
Here Clam. London, I've done Simone Rocha. I've done Richard Quinn. He's a big up-and-coming designer now. Paris is a big one. Like, I do Hermes. I've done Hermes, like, eight or ten times now. Nina Ritchie, Off-White, Moogler, Montclair.
Wait, okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
So, does the brand come to you with, like, here is our vision, here is what we want, and then you execute it, or do you, look at it from, like, each model's individual hair, like what is that?
It kind of depends. So initially what they do is they reach out to his agency and they option him for the show. So if he gets booked for the show, with every show that you do for Fashion Week, you always have a hair and makeup test prior to the show. So normally in New York, it's a lot of those tests they try to do the week before Fashion Week starts. But as the shows go on, right, because every week bumps up to each other, you can't do that for the rest of the city. So you're flying, usually it's like you're flying from London at midnight, and then you've got like a 4 a.m. test the next day, and you're running to a show, and they've got another test and another show. Like, they start to overlap, which is insane.
Oh my gosh, how exciting.
It's insane. But the importance of doing that is it gives the hair and makeup artists time to meet with the designers, talk about the vision, see the line, see their inspiration. They test out a couple of different hair and makeup looks, and then they decide what's going to be done prior to the show.
How far ahead before the show does that happen?
Sometimes, like I said, like in New York, it's usually like the week before, but
okay,
you get into London, Milan, or Paris, it's like sometimes it's the night before, sometimes it's 2 days before, it could be hours before. It just depends on scheduling, because it's, I mean, it's one of the biggest nightmares of the fashion weeks, because not only are there so many shows overlapping, but then yeah, you also have to fit in the time to do those tests, which
can, wow,
I mean, it's like 18, 20 hour days that we're doing.
Wow.
On top of that, flying and jumping right into it again. So it's yeah, a grueling. It's, everybody always, you know, when I tell people that I've done Fashion Week, they always think it's so glamorous. And I'm like,
yeah, well,
yes, there's the side that if you're attending shows and you're, you know, going to events and going to dinners and you get to experience the city and do all this stuff, it can be really awesome. Obviously, people that do what I've done, I mean, you get addicted to it and you love it and you like the fast paced dress of it, but it is definitely not the glamorous side whatsoever.
Okay, I have another logistical question about just like how Fashion Week works.
Yeah.
So does each major brand just host one show in one city?
Why are you like literally reading my mind? I was gonna
say,
does Hermes just do Paris or do they
do New York and then everyone also goes to London?
Yeah. Like, no, typically, yeah, you would only do, I mean, you think about how much money goes into these shows and how much time and planning and how much they put into design. I mean, when you have your show going on, these designers are already working on next season's show.
Yeah.
So, no, they always, you have one city. Most, I don't think I've ever really heard of somebody doing more than one city.
Okay.
Some designers have switched their cities. Like obviously Hermes is based in Paris. They're the major fashion house in Paris. So they would always be in Paris. There's a lot of people that used to show in New York that don't necessarily show in New York. I know there's a couple of people who have maybe like moved from New York to showing in Paris instead. Stuff like that, but
okay. So typically one city.
Yeah,
and it reminds me. Sorry, have you guys seen that Amazon series? I want to say it's called like Day of or like 24 hours, and they like document the 24 hours leading up to like a big event. So like they did the Chanel runway show where they rented out the what?
That's cool. Is it the one where they did the like Snowtown?
No, let me look up what it was called.
Unless they've changed it now, but for years they used the same building in Paris every year, and they would just completely, nobody else was allowed to show. Like a lot of designers will use the same spaces, right? And different days are their shows, but Chanel uses the space that nobody else is allowed to use because they're spending the like entire month building the set custom.
How cool was the resort wear one where they built like a cruise ship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cool.
They had one
so
cool. Behind. Do you remember the one they had that rocket? They built like a rocket ship.
Yes. They just do epic things.
Yeah.
Oh, I found it.
What's
I
it
found
called?
The show I was thinking of. It's called 7 Days Out. And they like have done different like events. So like the one I was thinking of, they recorded like 7 days out of what happens before the Chanel fashion show that was held at, well, it was like that famous Paris Garden. I don't know.
Oh.
One of the most,
but it was like cool seeing like what the seamstresses are literally doing day of, like because they don't know what models wear each piece until like 6 days before.
Yep.
So and it was kind of fascinating.
During, you know, we get usually between 3 or 4 hours for your hair and makeup call time before showtime. And they're still back there stitching and tweaking stuff until like minutes before the show. So.
Well, I'm like obsessed with Project Runway. I love that show. So I love Brandon Maxwell and I love Nina Garcia. She's like this, she is the type of like bitch that is the scariest bitch out there. Like way scarier than Regina George.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
But yeah, Brandon Maxwell's cool one too. And I really loved, like, I just thought it was really fun because obviously he was stylist for Lady Gaga for a long time before he started his brand. And we were so fortunate to be able to work on his first show. And then I think we did 4 of them. So to be able to see like from, you know, we did it. It was in like Mr. Chow's in New York, which is a really famous restaurant. But like the the backstage that we had was like the smallest room you've ever seen. There was only, I was only allowed to have like five assistants in there. And I mean, it was like absolute insanity because you had hair and makeup so close together, you could barely move. And then you had to get the models in there. I mean, I was like outside of the room shouting and telling people where to go because I couldn't physically get in to move people into their chairs.
Wow.
And then we had to all be kicked out before the show even started because they had to move other stuff into the room. I mean, it's like absolute craziness.
Wow.
Well, I mean, he's had such success and it's been so cool to see, you know, where, from where he started to where he's gotten to. And he really, I feel like he's a really cool one because he really puts an emphasis on like, he picks the models he chooses because he wants them to feel like they're part of his family. Like he is so close with every single girl that walks in his show. He has a relationship with them. And so I really love that it was just like so personal to him. And he really kind of makes everybody feel like you're such an integral part of the show and you're so important to kind of the whole thing, which is really cool.
That's like so rare in that industry, I feel like.
We just get a very different sense of feeling from one show to the next. So
yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
Oh, I love it. Well, yeah. Cool. You have some fun stories to tell.
Yeah.
So let's move on to post fashion week. You're in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. How did you meet your partner, Stephanie, to launch 11 Co. Agency?
11 Co. Yeah. So after I had started, I touched on, I flipped everything. I started a bridal business when I first moved here. And I, there's a magazine that they do like a best of the city issue. And they had one where they did a category for makeup artists. And this was back in 2014. So I had been here about a year, year and a half. And they did a category for top makeup artists in the Valley. And they picked five makeup artists and I was one of the five. So it was really rewarding for me because I was like, okay, I must be doing something right. This was a good choice because, you know, I'm starting to set myself up here, which is cool. And my partner, Stephanie, was one of the other five that was picked. So they do a kind of like a launch party for the issues that they have. And so we both went to the launch party. We were the only two makeup artists out of the five that showed up. So we met and just started chatting. And it was just kind of one of those things where you were like, you know, in like Step Brothers, when you're like, wait, did we just become best friends?
Yeah.
Like we have the same exact birthday, same year, born 12 hours apart exactly, which is insane.
Which I think is so crazy.
And it's Valentine's Day. So it's like a very odd birthday to have. So we're both Aquariuses. And we just kind of connected after that and stayed in touch. And then about a year and a half later, she reached out and was like, you know what, we need to somehow work together. Cause we would just continually refer people to each other when we were booked on stuff. Like if I was booked, I'd send them to her, vice versa. And so, after that, it was like, okay, well, how can we start actually working together instead of just referring people to each other? So we started teaching, makeup classes at different salons and spaces around Phoenix just to get a feel for how we worked together. And it just kind of clicked immediately. We kind of felt like we were like each other's yin and yang. We just worked really, really well. And with all of the background that I had managing and doing everything with Fashion Week and working with agencies, we chatted a lot about how to create something like that here in Phoenix, but have more of like a team aspect to it. So not just representing hair and makeup artists, but really kind of making it feel more like a family and like working together. And she had such a background in education and teaching. So we kind of morphed those two ideas together to create what was originally the Phoenix Makeup Collective. And then as we grew, we realized that we wanted to do hair and makeup. And then we wanted to incorporate photo and a couple of other things. And that's when we kind of got to the point where we decided we needed to rebrand just so that we could continue to grow the business and not be so pigeonholed into that specific name we had started with.
Smart.
That's kind of how that started. So yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. It was just kind of one of those, like, had neither of us gone to that event, we wouldn't have what's going on now kind of thing.
Seriously, I know. I just think it's so crazy too that you guys, the same birthday thing and all that. I mean, that is what plays into your, the rebrand name, right?
Yeah. So we wanted something that wasn't going to be particular to just beauty or hair and makeup in case we wanted to continue to expand from there. So we were looking at different ideas and I just started looking up stuff and I was like, we got to do something that has to do with the fact that like we've got the same birthday or the same something, but like not in a cheesy way. And I realized that the Aquarius is the 11th sign in the zodiac. And as like a power number, there's a lot of cool attributes that I felt like really tied into both me and her personalities with the number 11. And then I always like to say that, you know, with our artists, we always expect everybody to give and take everything to 11, you know, past 10.
Yeah.
It's kind of, in that sense, we wanted to keep collective in the name so people would catch on and know it was the same business, but we wanted to kind of shift it slightly. So we felt like it was kind of the perfect name to transition to.
Cool. It's yeah. also like two ones.
Yeah.
Know, like, oh yeah. That's really cute.
Yeah, lots of it. So that's kind of the gist of that. But
how many artists do you guys have total right now?
So with me and Stephanie, we've got 9 of us. So we've got 7 other people with us now. And it's crazy. I can't believe it. I think back to when it was just me and her starting and we were filming in my living room and working out of my house before we even had a studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we've got 7 people that are part of our family. And it's been so exciting to kind of see this thing grow into what it's become and hopefully where it's going to go from here.
So if somebody wants to basically be represented by an agency such as yours, what do you guys look for in an artist?
We're pretty particular. I think one, because, and you can tell, I would like to think you can tell from our social media and from our website that you get a feel of like our aesthetic versus some other people or other artists you might see in the Valley. And we really do focus on taking more of like an editorial approach to client and more consumer or commercial based work, you know, making those, you know, bridal clients or anything like that feel a little bit more elevated. Like it's a little bit more editorial in a sense. And even when we are doing corporate work or basic men's grooming, that's kind of the approach we've always taken. So obviously the other artists that we look into, their aesthetic is very important. We want to make sure it ties into our brand and what our artists are already doing. But I like to think now at this point, because we've built such a big family and everybody is works so well together, that I think almost more important to us is how do they work within the team we already have. Because with the aesthetic, and part of Stephanie's background was, we always wanted to take people who were already successful and doing well, but were still open to being molded or taught and kind of transition their techniques to maybe grow their work and the way that they do their art. And so for us, the aesthetic wasn't the big thing, because we could kind of guide them and shift them into the direction we want them to go. Whereas more, we want to make sure, does everybody else, you know, do they work well with everybody else? Does everybody jive? Because to us now, I think that's more important, is making sure anybody that comes in moving forward fits in with the family we already have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So do you have to like educate them and do like trainings to make sure that they're...
A lot of the time, and this is what I've kind of taken off of working with agencies and Fashion Week and everything, is assisting is such an important part of the session world. And a lot of people do that for years and years before they start going off on their own. And it's important because you're working with people who are already in the business. You're starting to get a feel for the industry and you're making your own connections within that industry before you go off. And the goal obviously is to get signed yourself eventually. But assisting is just, the people you're assisting are these huge names in fashion. And so the stuff you're getting from them, the education, the skill, the learning is just huge. So we've kind of taken that approach, and that a lot of the people that we've signed have actually been assisting us for a few years prior. So some people come in, and if we don't think they're ready to be a full artist to begin with, we'll start bringing them on jobs with us so we can start to get like a feel for their work ethic, how they work, all like that kind of stuff.
Essentially.
And so we have them assist for a while, and then the team gets used to working with them as well. And then if we think it's a good move to go forward, then we'll, you know, bring them up and sign them on. So we've actually done that with a couple of the people that are in our agency now. That's been good, because then you almost eliminate that opportunity of signing somebody and then immediately regretting it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
there's not as much of a surprise in that sense, because they've already been working with us, and if it meshes, then it's good to go.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It's like hiring is the hardest part.
Yeah.
What do they say? Hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like interns, right? You almost, same type of thing. I hate the idea of interns in the sense of, with my guys, I'm like, no, you get paid to assist, because there's a lot of places you don't get paid to assist. So if we can do that, I want to do that. But it's that same idea, right? So you get used to working with these people before you bring them on full time.
Right.
Yeah.
What has it been like working with a partner, like working with Stephanie? What have been like the challenges? What have been the pros to the situation?
She's awesome. And it's been such an interesting ride for us, because I feel like we started this business in our mid-20s, or started working together more like in our mid to late 20s. And now we're continuing and we're in our 30s. And like I have an almost 2-year-old, she's pregnant now and she's due in September. So mm-hmm. we've had these huge like transitions in life. And so kind of feeling out how we work together with all of this stuff going on, there's definitely been ups and downs. But what I really appreciate about her is that just like with our birthdays and everything, like we are so like, if I'm black, she's white. Like there's so many things that like I really do well with. And then she has these things that she does really well with. And together it like makes what we do work. If that makes
awesome.
Sense.
Obviously, yeah.
Stuff that I struggle with, there's stuff that she struggles with. And it always seems to be kind of the opposite on us. We're not both succeeding or like really strong in the same area, if that makes yeah. sense.
Nikki so, and I are kind of like that too. Yeah.
Like, totally. Like I'm terrible when it comes to delegating. I just want to take everything and do it myself because I'm like the worst micromanager in the world. And she's so patient with me because I know there's days where she's sitting across the desk from me looking at me like, I actually want to kill you, but she won't say it. And she'll just be like, okay, I'm going to let you get there yourself because I'm just, it's stuff like that. Like she can just be so patient. And so like the way she approaches things or the way she communicates, she does really, really well. And I struggle with some of that stuff. So it's definitely been, I think it's been good for me because I need to be better at doing that stuff. And I need to be better with sharing responsibility and working with somebody. And unfortunately she's been my guinea pig in that, which I'm sure she'll giggle if she hears this, but I mean, overall, I really enjoy working with her and I hope that we continue to do this for as long as we can. And it's been really fun. I don't know if I would have been able to do it by myself, cause I'm sure you guys understand too,
yeah.
like just having that soundboard or somebody else to kind of help support you just in the sense of, you know, whether it's an idea or you're struggling with finances or anything. It just, for me, it's been really helpful to have somebody else that's in it with me just all mm-hmm. the way from the beginning.
Do you have any advice for anyone in any industry who's maybe thinking about starting a business with a partner or like looking for a partner?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say have a conversation before you start and be very candid and very open about both of your goals and responsibilities and what you guys are both willing to take on, because you might think it's one thing, but you might just assume, well, yes, I'm willing to put, you know, 80 hours a week into this. And, you know, well, she's going to see the same thing, but unless you already have that conversation prior, even if you think, don't assume, just get everything out in the open, because you don't want to have anything where you know, you get down the road and then you start having arguments or bumps because you guys just both weren't on the same page to begin with, I think. Cause I feel like that was good with us. Like we went over and talked about stuff constantly before we actually took the jump into
it.
Yeah,
that's really smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously just having that comfortability of like being able to voice an opinion without feeling like you're hurting feelings or anything.
She's like my sister too. So, you know, it's like one of these things where if we do like snap or bitch at each other, 5 minutes later, we're like skipping down the road to Chop Shop to go get a snack and you know, whatever. Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, we're at a point now where we know, like, we both put the business and the success of our team first, and that's most important. So any of this stuff we're having issues with, we'll work through it, you know?
You are obviously mom. You mentioned you have an almost 2-year-old Vera, who is the cutest freaking thing ever.
Buchanan's girlfriend.
I know. They're so together. They are adorable. So tell us about your journey becoming a working mom and how you've handled that transition.
I don't know if I've handled it. I think I'm still trying to figure it out.
Tell me about it.
Huge, huge change. I mean, that was the reason why I'm still not doing Fashion Week was my last season I was pregnant with Vera. So that was a big change. To be honest, I don't know if I was ready to stop doing that. I think looking back, obviously I stopped because I had to. And I think I really would have loved to maybe had one more season to mentally prepare and know I was finishing, where it just kind of happened. And I was like, oh, this is happening. But obviously she's 150% worth it. But, that was definitely a struggle for me. And then getting back to work after having her, obviously running your own business, you don't get maternity leave. I was doing payroll 2 days after I came home from the hospital, and I did my first wedding back 3 weeks after she was born.
Wow.
So in retrospect, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't recommend that at all because that was terrible. But I just didn't know. And I don't think anybody can be prepared, really. You just don't know how much time they consume in your life until you have one. Like I was like, I'll be back to Fashion Week, you know, in February. And she was born in September. It's been almost 2 years now and I'm not going back. Like, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
So it's definitely been a struggle. I am so fortunate that my in-laws, my husband's parents, are like the best babysitters in the world. and they have taken her, they take her, I mean, multiple days a week so that I can get work done.
That's amazing.
Because especially, you know, at this age, it's very difficult, Nikki, you know, trying to work from home and having them home. I mean, all she wants to do is climb on top of me. And
So
trying to, you know, get some time to do some work at home just isn't possible. So I think it was just a matter of like accepting the help, like I said, delegating and telling somebody like, I can't do it all myself. So accepting, you know, my mother-in-law coming over all the time. And I think it's good for her too, because she's getting to spend so much time with some of her grandparents, which is important, but being okay with that and just saying, you know, like let them take her and then give myself specified time to do the work I need to do. And then I feel like I'm a little bit more on top of it.
Yeah. It's tough. But so I remember my question, it was, I wanted to touch on, so we're kind of backtracking a little bit, but I'm back with the agency and transitioning during the pandemic.
Yeah.
How has that been for you guys? And, you know, what steps are you taking to continue to keep the business intact and all of that?
Well, and I do a couple things. So I love that everybody is paying more attention to sanitation practices and is kind of more aware of this stuff. To me, my reaction was myself and my team already does all of these things and puts these things into practice every single day because that's our job. So I kind of love that it's almost holding a couple of other artists out here, because you know there's a lot of people out here that work and are not practicing what they should be practicing. So I love
the aspect
that it's kind of bringing that to a forefront, because sanitation is a huge part of our business and we are absolutely psycho about it. And we've been like that since before, I mean, since all of us were individual artists. That's not something new. So that was never an issue with us. But the difficulty was obviously March and April for us are our big months of like revenue because of the weddings that happen. I had to reschedule 25 weddings just for the month of April.
Wow. Yeah.
That gives you an idea of how much work we do. And that really catapults and takes care of our rent for the summer slower months.
Right.
So, and then outside of that, you know, all of my guys work within my agency. Some of them also take, you know, if they're hairstylists, they work in a hair salon and do their cut and color clients there. You know, they're not working there either. So a lot of my guys are stuck at home with no income coming through. So it's been very stressful. I mean, I do all the books and everything for our business. So luckily I mean, not nice to me and Stephanie, but I haven't paid us out much this year. So I have enough in there to take care of our rent and keep our studio for the next couple months, which I know is not the case for some people. But yeah, we're just kind of hoping that this kind of ends quickly, because we can't really do anything until we can get in front of people. I mean, right now me and Steph are meeting and kind of brainstorming and starting to kind of think of different ways we can start creating different options of services we can offer that are going to be through online. So if something like this does happen again, we will have some kind of continued source of revenue happening, so we don't get to a complete stop of zero.
Right. Yeah.
It's been interesting for sure. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that are feeling it, but we definitely, I mean, it's completely put all of our business to a stop. Fortunately, we're still booking weddings.
Oh, good.
Because we book into 2021. We book like 8 to 12 months in advance, at least for the wedding stuff, which is a big bulk of our business.
Yeah.
And then all of the weddings that we did have to move did reschedule. So we didn't have any that flat out canceled, which is.
That's good.
Very, yeah. And of course for those brides too, because I feel for them, poor things.
Oh my gosh. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
You know, what sucks is like, it's not like they can reschedule for like July, you know, like one wants a summer wedding and we don't even know if like that.
Unless you've got an indoor venue, then it really doesn't matter.
True.
Also pushed. I've had conversations with a lot of our brides, and I've recommended, you know, consider doing Thursday or Monday weddings, because a lot of your venues have, of course, like they all know, book years in advance. So those weekends are going to be taken. So as long as you're open to maybe not having it on a Friday or a Saturday, you can still have it at the same spot you were looking at. You probably still have your same vendors. I'm sure people are doing what we're doing, which is we were honoring everything and putting all our deposits and everything towards their new date and doing whatever we could to kind of help
them. So you're lucky in that no one like rescheduled to a date that you had already filled or something.
You're lucky. As soon as this started happening, I thankfully just kind of was like, just to be in case, when they first started talking about this kind of like early March, I reached out to every single bride we had between March and June and was like, just reaching out if this stuff gets worse, do you guys, have you started talking to your planners about this? If not, start the conversation because you just want to make sure.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, keep in mind, we already have stuff booking for the fall and into spring and fall of 2021. So if you do have to move something, let me know your dates as soon as you get them, because I want to make sure that we're available for you. Luckily, like, you know, we do have 9 people. So we,
yeah,
fortunately didn't have any conflicts with any of the dates that came through, which is very
great. Yeah, that's super nice.
So we'll see.
So we always go into a quick fire round, but really quick before we do that, I thought about something I wanted to add is that I think what's so unique and really great about you as a makeup artist is you put a huge emphasis on skincare.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously like your makeup doesn't look good if your skin doesn't look good. I literally have like 3 huge breakouts on my face right now that are.
I was like, don't judge me. I'm sitting here with like absolutely makeup on, but.
Yeah. Well, this quarantine is not doing my face very well. So I guess just kind of like, if you want to touch on that and some of your favorite prep products.
I think it goes back to also like my approach and the way that I do makeup is different and unique from other artists because I have a fine arts background. So I look at it more from like a painting approach. And so that's why for me, I feel like skin has always been so fascinating, like different finishes and how to get the skin to look certain ways. And everybody always tells me that I'm like a mad scientist when it comes to makeup because I've always got my palettes out and I'm always mixing in different mediums and
colors. That's so cool. Yeah. You never use a product straight out of the package. You always are like mixing 1,000 different things on your hand.
So that is definitely my approach. I love skin because I just feel like there's so many different things you can do to it as far as like, do you want something more matte? Do you want a satin finish? Do you want a gloss finish? Do you want dewy? All that stuff. So obviously, like you said, skincare is a huge thing. I mean, there's people who struggle with skin. And if you have stuff that is not something you can take care of just with like a serum every day, I mean, there's people that struggle with certain stuff that I can't tell them to go fix without
right.
A few years of stuff on their own, right? So that stuff, you know, you have to just work with what you get and cover it. But for the most part, I would say, one, wash your face. I can't tell you how many people I work on that are like, I just fall asleep in my makeup. And then I don't know why I have these breakouts in the morning. And it just makes me want to throw up in my
mouth. Ew, like imagine what their pillowcase looks like. Like, come on, that reason alone.
Two, don't use Dove soap to wash your face. Just
don't do it. To be said.
But I actually, and I feel like I've started to do this a little bit more lately, but it's, I think the important thing is, when you cleanse, the biggest thing you need to do afterwards is use a toner. And I think some people don't think about this, right? Like using a toner sets your pH balance of your skin back to where it should be. And it's-
Which one do you recommend?
So I actually have a company that I've been using lately and I use a lot of their products. I post a lot about them, but they're called Good Molecules.
Oh, yeah.
Their branding is so cute.
Wait, I just got a package from them.
Did you?
Yeah, they're super affordable. Yeah. Didn't I tell you about that, Becca? Like, they sent me a package. Yeah, so I'm going to.
I'm on their PR too. So they send me stuff and I work with the people from Beautylish. So they sent me when they first started selling the line. And honestly, everything I've tried, I absolutely love. But their toner is my favorite. I've been using it on myself for like 2 months now. And I feel like it makes all the difference when I put that on in the morning. And do it 2 or 3 times, not just once.
Oh, I've heard that from Korean skincare.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what I love is that you do it. If you do it once, yeah, it's going to set you back to where you were before you stripped away residue or dirt or anything. But if you're a little bit dry, you do it again, it's going to rehydrate and bring it up again. And then if you do it again, it's just like so much moisture and everything is happily settling into the skin before you apply anything on top of that.
Amazing.
So I think the other thing I was going to say is like dermaplane. If you do not dermaplane, that is like an absolute game changer for how your skin texture will be and how your makeup will apply on top of and how your skin will feel. And that makes a huge difference in doing makeup on clients that I've noticed.
Like your skin looks really good right now.
Mine?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's glowing.
Like stuck in quarantine, right? Like use those little, what are they called? Like tingle tools? Those like little razors.
Yeah.
I sent those to Nikki.
I've just been using a straight up.
Oh yeah, no, I saw that. You made me cringe a little bit in that story.
Everyone was like, "You almost sliced your eye open."
Don't do that. Don't do that. But yeah, use that and use it kind of like in the areas you know you think like your chin or like above your lip, stuff like that, brows, Because just the, it removes all the dead skin cells off your skin. It like immediately brightens your skin, makes your skin cell turnover, I think, a little bit quicker. All of that stuff is just like, those are my big things. If you can do little things like that at home, it will make a world of difference.
Yeah. I honestly think I want to invest in that like $200 Dermaplane. I think it's Dermaflash might be the company or something.
I would say use the Tingle tools while you're home, go back to your facial lady and have them do it. Okay. That's the other thing. Like I recommend like do the things you can do at home, but I'm such a big fan of also like us, right? I'm a professional in the beauty industry. Go see a professional for those type of things.
Yeah.
Be able to go back out because they know what they're doing and it's worth it.
And they can use like medical grade razors too.
Exactly. Mm.
Okay, Brianna, what is your favorite? These are your quick fire questions. What is your favorite Sephora makeup brand?
Okay, so that is definitely Charlotte Tilbury or Fenty.
Wow, I have never owned either of those, so.
Charlotte Tilbury, this is also.
Oh, wait, no, I have Pillow Talk on right now. I have her lip, yeah.
Yeah, I've worked with her on shows in Fashion Week as well. She is such an interesting individual, but she's an unbelievable makeup artist and she's created an unbelievable makeup line.
Wow.
Every single thing in her line is just like, I highly, highly recommend it. It's like gluten-free, it's vegan, and her pigments, her color, just everything. I just cannot recommend it enough.
My next foundation, I'm going to get hers.
Yes. So just so many things. Like her primer too. She's got this Wonderflash primer. It's, if you're going to get the foundation, get that also to put underneath.
Okay.
And Fenty's awesome too. Like the line that Rihanna's made is just incredible, especially for like deeper skin tones.
I've heard of people buying her darker like sticks and using them for contour because she has so many shades.
She's got contour sticks now too, I think. She's got
She does. Okay.
But yeah, just her stuff in general is she's got a wonderful line as well.
That's really cool.
Yeah, those are my favorites for sure.
Okay, favorite drugstore item.
Okay. I would say brand or specific item.
Doesn't matter.
Either.
Okay. Well, I would say Maybelline.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the makeup artists that is somebody who I have been following and inspired by for a long time, her name's Erin Parsons, and she is the global ambassador or director for Maybelline. And I love watching the stuff that she creates because she's also like an editorial makeup artist. But she does these looks and, you know, a lot of the time she's using Maybelline for everything. So I love it because it kind of shows that there is like a lot of stuff you can do with a brand that's, you know, more of a drugstore brand than more of a high-end brand. But they've got these, their gel eyeliners or I don't know if they're gel based, but she's got these eyeliners that you can just like blend in with brushes on the lids that just are like amazing. So they've got some cool stuff in that line.
Okay. What's your skincare tip that helps with makeup application? We kind of already did that, Dermaplane.
Yeah, I didn't touch that. That's what I was going to say. It's just like the Dermaplaning, wash your face, and the toner.
Okay, style. Oh, sorry. Up-and-coming makeup trend.
Up-and-coming makeup trend. I feel like it's kind of already here, but I really love that everybody's jumping into this. Like, I mean, it's been around for a long time, but the more like fluffing up the brows using like soap or Elmer's glue. I love that look of a more of like fluffy 80s brow.
Yeah, you do that on me. I always.
Oh my God, you have the best brows for that.
And she uses Dr. Bronner's soap.
I use Elmer's glue too, like I do on myself. I just did a tutorial on my YouTube.
Nice.
I use Elmer's glue on myself.
Okay, would I qualify? Like, I don't know if that would make sense for me because I'm microbladed.
Well, you still could because if you're feeling like you're microbladed, but you're like kind of at a point where you need a touch up, but you're not getting the touch up.
Yeah, my microblading is like blue right now.
Yeah. So and you could, cause you still have brow hair there, correct? Like you're not totally no brows.
Yeah.
So you could use the soap or the Elmer's glue to fluff up what you have. And then you would go in, like I prefer to go in with something like Anastasia Beverly Hills for dip brows and take a super small, like angled liner brush, go in and make hair like strokes and kind of fill in the spots where you need them.
Okay.
Once you fluff up the brows, like use a spoolie brush and comb them up, let them set where they are, then you'll see where you're missing spaces or where you feel like you need to create a little bit more fullness.
Okay. I can do that.
Yeah. Watch my YouTube. It'll help. You'll see what
I'm doing. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. You just started this awesome YouTube channel and like, you're just a great video editor too. Like who knew?
Trying to do, you know, while I'm stuck at home, might as well try and do these things.
Yeah. Okay, last question. What is your style icon or era that you're obsessed with?
Okay, so I have two. So, well, one for each, I guess. So me, for the era, it's always been the 70s.
Yes, always, that's always me.
Gravitated towards the 70s. Hair, makeup, style, everything. I feel like Stevie Nicks is like my absolute love of my life. So I feel like that's a huge factor of that. but then for me, personal style, like icons that I gravitate towards, I like to say, I was trying to think, I was like, how do I describe my vibe best? And I was thinking, like, if Marilyn Monroe and Courtney Love had a baby and Patti Smith was the godmother, that's my kind of
I love it.
Style icon.
Ideal world.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's a great answer.
Yeah. So, and that goes for like hair, you know, and hair and makeup, just everything, man. So,
yeah. Well, I feel you on the 70s thing. I feel like I should have been born in the 70s.
That's just so cool. If you look back at some of, like, you know, when they would do like the peach, or they would do like the blushes that would go up the cheekbone, up towards the brow bone, into the temple area. You know, like, I've done that on you before.
Yeah.
Without, I mean, all you think about these things and you see them in stuff coming out now and you're like, oh, it's so rooted back to, they did so many things. You know, the 60s was like that too, with a lot of the graphic liners and things that you would see, like more mod styles. But I just love the 70s because I feel like there was so much experimentation happening with hair and makeup then that is still having such an impact on how stuff is styled and inspired today.
Wait, speaking of, have you guys been watching Little Fires Everywhere?
I just finished.
Okay, I just started. But they did such a good job with like the styling and hair and makeup, like, of that time era. Like,
it made me miss the 90s.
Like, what is it?
The 90s.
Okay, yeah.
Awesome. That was fun too.
It made me miss the 90s.
Like, even the way Reese's nails were done, like, they were so attentive to detail. It was really good.
Yeah.
That's like, I was looking at one of the questions you guys were asking, which we didn't touch on, but like one of my favorite, or like a moment from like my film days back in New York. And one of my favorite things to do on film, like one of the movies I was shooting was about it was called Samuel's Game. And it was about this guy who moves into an apartment in Brooklyn and he starts seeing this woman who apparently he comes to find out was like murdered in his room in his apartment in the 1940s.
That's a big
thriller, creepy ghost thing. But part of it we shot was in the subway museum, which is in Brooklyn, and it's down in the subway, and they have different subway cars from different periods of time. So one of the shots that we did was like him going through subway doors and going into different decades each time he did. So we had to shoot, we had one from the 40s, one from the 70s, and one from the 90s. And
wow.
Doing period stuff like that, because you know, you've got a bunch of extras and now I have to do all the hair and makeup for
these styles. That's cool.
It's so fun to do. I mean, when you're doing a film or a show like that, I always loved doing period stuff because it's so cool to have to go back and make sure your references are like on point and kind of pay attention.
How fun.
Like you said, the little details, like her nails, like things like that, because it makes it, completely makes it.
Right. Yeah. So cool. Yeah. I know. Even like the set and everything on that show, like there was this baker's rack in one of the scenes in her house, and my mom had one of those, and I started having like an
flashback,
like nightmare, because my mom used to make me, that was like one of my chores, I had to like dust it and everything would like fall off of it was like the worst piece of furniture I've ever seen in my whole life.
Love it.
So very nostalgic.
That's with Joshua Jackson. So I was so happy when I saw he was in that. I was like,
yes. Right? I'm like, Mighty Ducks. Oh, Charlie. So funny. Okay, perfect. So tell us how we can find you and support you.
Yeah. So my Instagram is Brianna, Brianna _ Casey, Casey. That's my personal one. My agency is 11 Co Agency. That's the handle for Instagram. Our website is www.11coagency.com.
And it's 11 spelled out.
Yeah, 11 the word, sorry. And then I just started a YouTube also, so you can find me on there if you just search Brianna Casey on YouTube, and you can check out all of my videos for doing and being an over 30 mom with wrinkles and trying to figure out how to do makeup.
I love it.
Yeah.
Because no one else does that.
Yeah, just that was my thing. I was like, what's missing?
Like, why aren't people talking about this?
Well, you've got stuff where it's like you're in your 20s and your skin looks fucking fabulous. Excuse me, pardon my French. Your skin looks fabulous. And then you've got people like in their 40s and 50s doing mature makeup. And it's like, well, what happens to us in the middle where you're kind of stuck in between these two? And how can I take aspects of both approaches and like make it work for my skin? So that's my goal with that.
I feel like in college I was like such a brat about that. I was like, I can just like wash my face easily and it'll be fine. And it was, it always was fine. And now I'm like,
and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay, Bree. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bree. It was so nice getting to know you better.
You too. I'm glad we got to chat.
Yay. I just can't wait to see you soon.
Yeah, I know. Love you guys.
Love ya.
Thank you so much for listening to the Better Offside podcast. Be sure to check out our show notes for links to find our guests, their business, and any other products we might have mentioned. Don't forget to subscribe
and please rate and review on Apple Podcasts.